On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we draft baseball teams based on how confident we are that they're going to win the World Series. Spoiler alert, we're not confident in any of them. We talk about Framber Valdez and the cross-up heard round the internet. Paul Skeens dominating the Dodgers. Dodgers looking lost in Pittsburgh. And then, of course, it's Friday, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world older and younger than Cody Bellinger. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we're 60 years old today.
We did it. It took a lot of work. I had to be patient for Jake to finally join me at the age of 30, but here you are on September 5th. Happy birthday, my friend. It is Friday. We have a podcast to do. That is my gift to you, is you get to join me here in this virtual space and talk about baseball with me. I hope that this is a reasonably good start to your 30th birthday.
Finally, I've been waiting for this for a long, long time. For those of you who don't know about the Bellinger Zone, we'll explain it now. Jordan, born in March of 1995. I was born in September of 1995, and any baseball player born in between those 2 days, we refer to as the Bellinger Zone, and you'll never guess why.
Cody Bellinger, who, by the way, what a season for Cody Bellinger. He's just been kind of humming along for the New York Yankees. Like, he's going to hit 30 homers. He's got a 128 OPS plus. But most importantly, he turned 30 on July 13th, smack in the middle between our two birthdays. But that is going to conclude our 30th birthday discourse, because Jake, we have it's a lot over to do on this Friday episode of Baseball Barbacast, including an exercise that neither of us are looking forward to, so much so that we have almost done it on the podcast multiple times over the last few weeks, and we're just like, nah. And now here we are. We're finally going to do it. We are going to draft teams that we think are going to win, can win the World Series based on our confidence levels. And it's going to suck, because guess what? I'm here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I just watched the defending champions look like garbage for 3 days. And I'm still probably going to pick them pretty early in this World Series draft. There are a few other things that we certainly need to talk about. Framber Valdez, Paul Skeens, and the good, the bad, the ugly. But Jake, let's get to our opener, this miserable, miserable game we are about to play. Let's do it.
So if you've been watching this baseball season, we have. None of the teams inspire confidence. There is no runaway favorite or leader. Yes, the Milwaukee Brewers have a 5-game advantage, 4.5, I believe, for the best record in the league. They are 86-55. It has been a splendid year for the Brew Crew, and we are not trying to throw shade on them. However, I think it is comfortable. I feel comfortable saying they are not a runaway favorite right now for the World Series. And so what we're going to do here is go back and forth, and we're going to just take teams. And the only framework is, will they win the World Series? I think you could make any argument for or against 12 different teams. We are each going to pick 7 teams, totaling 14, to force ourselves to pick teams outside the playoff field as things stand Friday, September 5th, 9:33 a.m. Jordan, anything else we should say?
No. I mean, again, just like a little background on this. Like, I have, since we sort of thought about this concept a couple weeks ago, I've just had the list of the playoff teams like in a dock and just kind of checked in every couple of days and just shuffled them around. I did it again last night, and it's just like, I was like, no, I feel terrible about this. Whatever order I put these teams in, there's no amount of prep that is going to make me be like, yes, I have this correct. So with that in mind, I'm probably going to change my mind and feel good or bad about these picks very quickly. But all that said, it is your birthday, and I'm going to give you the first pick. Wow. We're not going to snake draft. We're just going to go back and forth. But you can have the first pick here. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. But I am just going to go ahead and let you select the first. And again, this is a very simple concept. It is just like, who do we feel the best about winning the World Series? And we'll do some version of this again when we actually get to the postseason. But especially because we've been looking at these same 12 teams and had to contemplate it and have had all of them make us look like fools over the course of the season, I think that's what makes this sort of fun. Hopefully you'll listen to, if not to actually do.
So I went to a wedding over the weekend, and I had like four people ask me who's going to win the World Series.
Yeah.
That's and I had no good answer.
You work in baseball. They think you have
to. You know what I usually say? You know what I say? Yeah. And you've probably heard me say this. You, the fans.
Let's hope.
My first pick.
See. Yeah, go ahead.
My first pick, speaking of you, the fans, is the Milwaukee Brewers at 86 and 55. And the reason I'm taking the Brewers has nothing to do with their magic win streaks or their high contact, good defense, speedster style of ball. It is simply because they have the best shot at a bye. And playing one fewer round, guaranteeing one fewer round of baseball, is the only thing I feel confident separating two teams like apart. Now, I will say the Brewers currently are, I think, 7.5 games clear for a bye in the National League. The Phillies are in that second spot. The Dodgers in the third spot. The Blue Jays and Tigers look pretty good for a bye. The Astros are 4 games back of Detroit for that second bye in the American League. But the Brewers' advantage makes me confident enough, all things considered, to pick them. I am, and we talked to Brian Anderson, their broadcaster, about this. I'm just fascinated, does this work in the postseason? We have evidence that it does. The 2015 Royals, right, found glory along these lines. And we have evidence that it doesn't. The game has changed a lot since the 2015 Royals. Home runs are more important than they've ever been, particularly in October when it's more difficult to string hits together. Andrew Vaughn has kind of fallen back to earth a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Do they have the offensive impact? Is Christian Yelich healthy? He was out the last couple of days. I will say on the flip side, Freddie Peralta, who has not given up an earned run since Gerald Ford was president, looks sensational right now. Like a real frontline ace that you feel confident giving the ball to in a game one. Now the Brewers bullpen super banged up right now with McGill on the shelf. They announced, I didn't see this out the outcome of this, but Pat Murphy, their manager yesterday, was like, we're going to put another reliever on the IL. And reporters were like, who? And he was like, I'm not going to tell you yet.
I will find out today as I'm going to go hang out with the Brewers for a couple hours in Pittsburgh before I drive home. So I will be there for the grand reliever IL reveal from Murph. Looking forward to that. But yeah, I mean, all these points are good. I do think that their offense certainly looks more, I'm more excited about the Brewers' offense. I know the numbers say that their barrel rate and whatever are still last in the league or whatever. I am still more excited and optimistic about this offense than I have in their recent playoff runs.
Sure.
That said, everything you said is concerning.
But I picked them first.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. I am going to take the Phillies, and I'm just going to do it quickly, and I'm going to move on. It would have been my first pick, and I would have taken the Brewers second if I had the second. If you had taken the Phillies for the reasons that you laid out, because I do think that thinking about the path is as much important about this conversation. We're going to get into this in terms of how many AL teams we pick before NL teams is as relevant as to how good we think these teams are. That said, the Phillies are the only pick that even losing Zach Wheeler, which is of course devastating, it is still a group that I feel good about. It was my preseason pick. It is a team that is still in position, reasonably good position to get a bye, and has been in the postseason enough times before, which can be a bad thing because we know how this has gone wrong for the Phillies and we know what that looks like, and that could be spooky. But it's also not a group that is going to show up and be like, oh my God, what do I do, in the way that some of these other teams, we don't really know how some of these rosters are going to perform at that time. Now, we don't know how any of them are going to perform, but I still think that when you combine the experience and you combine the highest level of the talent, which includes, even without Wheeler, some incredible high-end pitching, again, there's not a lot of easy picks in this draft, and this is one I still feel reasonably comfortable with, so I'm just going to say it and move on.
I would say Nola is my biggest worry there.
Sure.
He has not looked good, and if he is not able or capable of starting a playoff game, that thins out their bullpen if they have to do a bullpen game. It means they maybe have to start Taiwan Walker. It means that lefties are going to start the first three games of their series. And it just kind of depends on what type of lineup they face. Okay, my pick. I'm going to take the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I'm so glad you did so that I didn't have to. I probably was going to in the first like five or six, but go ahead.
They won last year.
True. Great point. Wow. I should have thought about it. Man.
They just won. You're talking about experience.
You wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known this week.
So for the last 2 months, they have just been in utter cruise control, bailed out completely right by the fact that the San Diego Padres over the last couple of weeks are also stuck in neutral, getting swept by the Orioles at home. First time the Orioles have ever swept an NL West team on the road. Little nugget there for you. Pretty fun.
Oh, that's just the end of that fun fact ever. Not since.
First time the Baltimore Orioles have ever swept an NL West team on the road.
Again, congrats, Padres. You know, the obvious caveat being that such series barely existed until 3 years ago, but still, that's a great nugget.
The Dodgers are confident. Let me back up. It's funny how this went. Someone was like, hey, are you guys going to be able to flip the switch? And Dave Roberts was like, I'm not really thinking about it that way. And then a couple weeks later, it was like, I think we'll be able to flip the switch. I do too. Because the high-end talent here is still the best in baseball. When everything's going right, and it hasn't at many times this season, they're still the Dodgers. And they still have Ohtani, Betts, who has looked better since coming on the podcast, and Freeman. What is the Will Smith situation? I know he got doinked on the hand by a foul ball. That feels pretty significant.
Yeah, so it seems like they've done enough testing to confirm that he won't have to go on the IL, but he's definitely going to miss multiple games in a row. This will be the first time Dalton Rushing starts multiple games in a row the whole season. I think he has one other time, which was like a ridiculous like day-night turnaround where they got in late and they're like, yeah, sorry, Will's not catching today. You're going to have to get back there, Dalton. But so big test on him. Now, that is important because Will Smith's one of their best hitters. And how can Dalton Rushing now manage this pitching staff, which even with Ohtani getting pushed back to next week because he's been sick, is now healthy? This is a pitching staff.
Glasnow, Yamamoto, Kershaw, Ohtani.
Yeah. Roki, don't worry about him. Don't know her. But it doesn't. But like this is it. And by the way, the offense, assuming Will Smith comes back, is also about to be fully healthy too. Muncy and Edmund are going to be back in the next week, and it seems like Muncy was really the glue holding this lineup together. As weird as that sounds, so I agree with you. But you still look at the best version of this team, and it's still one that I want to pick. It's one that is going to look, as we've said, we'll see how healthy they are in three, four weeks. But if they make it even 90% of the way to October with this group, it's going to look better on paper than it did last year. I mean, remember, there was a lot of confidence in them. Yeah, going into it last year. So I think that, now listen, even as talented as Snell and Yamamoto and Glasnow are, there's also questions about them. Honestly, less about Yamamoto because we saw him look awesome in October. But Glasnow and Snell, you know, Snell has mostly been good, but he's still clearly kind of shaken off the rust. And Glasnow is a very spotty track record in October. So it's not, then Kershaw, like who knows what we're getting, let alone Ohtani, et cetera, et cetera. So the talent, the ceiling is there. That's why I would have picked them early still, as bad as they look, as sad sack of a group as it was here in Pittsburgh. But, you know.
They won last year.
That too. Yeah, sure did.
I'm going to go ahead and pick them for last year.
Oh, man, you're crushing it.
Thanks.
All right. My turn. God, this is awful. All right, just give me the Astros again, going with my theme.
Incredible
of
pick.
The previous, again, I had Phillies over Astros preseason. The Astros had a billion people on the injured list, starting to get healthier. Am I concerned that Christian Javier and Luis Garcia are kind of shells of themselves? Yes. Yordan looking good, though. Starting to make me feel a little better. Starting to make me feel a little better. They do. And obviously missing Hader is concerning. This is now starting to think about, and we're going to see here in these next few picks, the American League still just feels more open. And again, picking the teams that we've seen do it, something of a revenge tour for Houston after their embarrassing exit last year. Now, you could say, well, that's the opposite of, right? Well, don't remind me of that. Shouldn't you be picking the Tigers? We'll see where we go with the Tigers here. The Astros have not seized the opportunity of the Mariners, you know, plummeting, but they still have, you know, what is it, a three and a half game division lead. Now, the reason this is a bad pick is obviously because they might not get the bye, and that was a huge deal last season. So that is why I'm a little on this. That said, I think I'm still going to take that group of players who have mostly been there, done that, than the other wild cards in both literal and figurative sense in the American League. And I don't feel good about it, folks. I don't feel good about it.
The reason I would feel good, the argument for the Astros really does revolve around Yordan Alvarez, who in 9 games since returning is 14 for 28 with 9 walks. That is a 500, 595, 786 line. I believe he got 4 hits in each of the last 2 days. He is hitting the snot out of it. And when he's cooking, dude, he is a top 5 hitter in the world. And for a team to just get him back.
The feeling of Yordan, like, he's got that, the stance where, like, his butt's kind of, like, twitching a little. He's got that little, like, it's like a different version of, you know, it's not like the Soto shuffle between pitches, but it's like while he's waiting for the pitch. And immediately, I mean, this dude missed months. And immediately teams were just like, oh no, oh no, oh no. Like, it's a combination of he was hitting and the way that he was being pitched, you could tell he's special. So
he's so
again,
good.
Can't do it by himself. There are still questions, a lot of questions about his team, but whatever. I'll go with the Astros.
Give me the Toronto Blue Jays.
Duh. Okay. I was hoping they would fall to me next just because they're one of the few teams with good vibes. This is the other thing. It's hard to find teams that have been consistently good vibes for a while. But okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Toronto.
I would have taken them higher.
I'm sure they're already insulted. Yeah.
I would have taken them higher if Shane Bieber hadn't looked shaky in his last outing in Cincinnati.
Okay.
He got knocked around a little bit this week at Great American Ballpark where, you know, everyone gets knocked around. I do think how he looked in his first 2 starts just gives them a different element where it's like he could start game 1 or 2 of a playoff series and you would feel awesome about it. And yeah, besides that, it's the vibes, dude. Like, they have not won a playoff game in this era.
I think that's correct. Yeah. They've got, I think they're on an L6, right? With this core, just like the Orioles.
The Beau Vlad core is L6. Winless in October.
Yep.
Do they feel the weight of that? They are going to get a bye. That first game is going to be at home, probably against a division rival, right? The 4-5 plays the 1, or the 3-6 plays the 1. 4-5 plays the 1. Yeah. Like, if they get Red Sox Yankees coming in to the Rogers Center, like, do they get tense? I say no, because I'm picking them here. George Springer, what a freaking year. Bo Bichette, oh my God. And then Dalton Varsho turning into Barry Bonds over the last couple of weeks while being Kevin Kiermaier in center field. I think, to me, it's just like, is the bullpen, is there enough there? Right? Is there enough there? Because it is not inspiring confidence right now. And in my mind, like, okay, so in October, right, starters go fewer innings generally. Games are shortened. Bullpens are leaned on. If you're the Blue Jays, you need 6 out of Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, Bieber. Right? You need length because you're not going to give the, like, you feel good about Louis Varland or Tommy Nance or even, I know Yariel Rodriguez has been all right. I don't know. That's my concern. from a vibes perspective, I think they're probably the second pick behind Milwaukee.
Sure. Yeah. No, 100%. And it's just like, how much does that bullpen scare you? But, you know, we've seen bad bullpens on paper just turn it on. I mean, Texas rode Josh Spores to the promised land, you know, and where's Josh Spores now? On the IL with shoulder surgery or whatever, and he's not. But, like, doesn't matter. If you could get a reliever to cook for 15 innings, which maybe Tommy Nance is the guy. I mean,
maybe
sure, why
Dylan
not?
Tate.
Yeah, but Dylan Tate, right? Exactly. I just called him up. He was untouchable in AAA. So that's in play. That's in play. And I think the Blue Jays would have been my next pick. All right. I am torn between
the
two
Yankees
American League
and the
teams.
Red Sox.
No, I'm going the same logic as you go before, and I'm going to take Detroit.
Because of the bye.
Because of the bye, I think they have the clearest path. I mean, you mentioned Toronto, you know, likely going to get a bye. And they're in good shape, the same record as the Tigers. Massive series this weekend in the Bronx, which, you know, we'll get to weekend preview later, but how we're feeling about the Yankees. It's possible we come back on Monday. It's like, you idiot, should have picked the Yankees. But for now, because the Yankees have still been fairly inconsistent against good teams, maybe I should take the Yankees here.
I feel like you're going to next,
but I'm going with the Tigers. I'll stick
Say
with the Tigers.
Say something nice about the Tigers.
I'll stick with GMAC Cash and the squad.
Bulletproof vest.
I came away from the postseason last year seeing the Tigers up close as a full believer in the operation, truly, and the direction that they were going.
And you're talking about the AJ Hinch mix and match.
Yes, yes. Like
carousel.
That concept and just like that they got that experience. They came close. They did go and beat Houston. They came close against Cleveland, just didn't quite have enough star power. And there's still some of those questions on this roster for sure, but I do think that this is a better team, and I do think that I'll pick AJ Hinch in October with this group that did learn from last year, with some players that have taken real steps forward, that should have a bye, that should be able to set up its pitching a little bit better, that will have Tarek Skubal. Again, I have some questions on the mound as well, but I'm going to say that about a lot of these teams. So I'll go with the team that I feel honestly better about getting a bye than Toronto, and I'll just go with them.
The argument against is who's starting game two.
Yeah.
Skerrick Tubal, who is a big lefty with a mustache and glasses. Yeah. Because last year when they were doing Skubal and, you know, pray for rain, they had this magic bullpen that they could throw at a lot of problems. They don't have that this year, or at least they have not had that this year to this point. Kyle Finnegan has still not allowed a run. Yeah. He
hopefully
had a groin
okay.
issue.
Yeah.
What'd he say?
Yeah, hopefully he's okay, because he's never been hurt in his career. And
as much as the Nats tried.
Right. No, seriously, this dude's been unbelievably durable. But, you know, but honestly, though, it's when you compare them in Toronto in terms of the bullpens and like confidence levels, it's not that different. Like, they still have guys that I like, and I think that they have guys that could turn it on. And Will Vest is awesome. So, like, it's enough. It's not like a game two. Yes, the starting is more of a concern for sure, but I don't know.
The Yankees.
Yeah. Make the case. Defend the team that you abandoned.
Abandoned? Why? Because I moved? A lot of good players on this team, man. I mean, you look at this roster. They got
sure
a lot of good base. They have
good players.
You could argue they have the second most good baseball players behind the Dodgers. You could even argue they have more than the Dodgers. I think that's tough.
I wouldn't
with
do that.
Pitching.
But yeah, it's close. They do have a lot. They sure do have a lot of good players. Yeah.
The out of nowhere ascension of Trent Grisham and Ben Rice elevates this offense from very good to the best in the league. Like, they have been the best offense in the league. If Aaron Judge can pick up a baseball and throw it on September 29th or 30th, when the wild card round starts, if he can do that, I would have taken, if you told me like, hey, Judge is going to play the outfield in October, they would be one of my first three picks, probably. The question marks around that concern me a little bit. The pitching at this point, I actually think is underrated, the starting pitching. Cam Schlittler has been a revelation. Fascinated to see how they deploy him in October. But Rodon and Fried, like, Carlos, dude, I'm so happy for that guy for just, you know, getting his crap together. And then Will Warren is missing a ton of bats. I know the, you know, run prevention isn't necessarily what people want or think it could be. And yes, are they susceptible to the hilarious blunder at an inopportune time? Yeah, but who among us isn't, you know? I find it very humanizing. Every time the Yankees make a dumb error, it's like me forgetting my lines in an elementary school play. It's just relatable.
Yeah, all fair points. Again, I almost picked them over the Tigers. You know, taking that series in Houston this week was nice.
One last thing. Playoff G. Do not forget Giancarlo Stanton.
You know, and that's very real. That is a very real thing. Now, is he also playing the outfield? Hopefully not. Hopefully not by that point. Because then we're having a different conversation. All right. Now we're really grinding through it here, folks. Because the teams still on the board are not inspiring a lot of confidence lately.
Cubs, Padres, Mets, Red Sox, Mariners, and the non-playoff teams.
I am going to go with the Chicago Cubs.
Wrong.
And great. That's fine. Probably. Statistically, is very...
11 and 12.
It's very likely that you are correct, that I am wrong about this. However, I did want to take a little bit of a stand of a, like, I am not giving up on this Cubs team. I think that this is a group. First of all, again, if we're talking about seeding and we're talking about path to the postseason, they do have a 4-game lead on San Diego for the top wildcard spot. So at the very least, you know, we're talking about, you know, home field for that first series. And that I don't think that's nothing. That makes me feel a little bit better. So maybe they don't catch the Brewers, but that makes me feel good. With how well the pitching has turned it on, I think the talent is still pretty overwhelmingly impressive on the offensive side, that I'm just counting on this being a decently real special run here for the Cubs. Now, again, it's not hard to pick against them because compared to some of the other teams I picked them over who have shown a lot more in October recently than they have, that's why I don't feel awesome about it. But with the combination of the current seeding and just kind of wanting to not discard them completely, this is my vote of confidence for the Cubbies of Chicago.
I'm going to take the Boston Red Sox, a team I would have taken earlier if Roman Anthony's oblique hadn't crumbled earlier this week.
Okay.
If I love that the Yankees and the Red Sox effectively have the same record, 78 and 62 for the Yanks, 78 and 63 for the Red Sox. They have gotten to this point in completely different and yet similar ways on a roller coaster of emotion. I do think, however, that from a vibes perspective, the Red Sox have an advantage. And if we are going from a completely unscientific approach, I'm just going to pull out my vibes card. I'm going to ship up to Boston and roll up to Fenway, and I'm going to hand it to the guy at the press gate and say, one World Series championship, please. If they win the first round, like if they win their wildcard series, I'm like, they're going to win the whole thing.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point. I think that their ceiling is probably, I mean, again, without Anthony, it definitely hurts. With Anthony, I would say, as far as American League teams, just like roster talent, they are pretty much up there with probably everybody except for the Yankees, to be honest, if we're talking about just like max talent. That said, the Anthony thing scares me. As good as Bayo and Giolito have been, we'll see. And again, it's also just like where they are in the standings and the likelihood that they're going on the road versus, you know, getting to play at Fenway. We'll see.
Sure.
But it's fine. Again, we're in this range where we could have shuffled this order a lot. So like picking the Tigers over them was very stupid.
I think the separator for them is they have Crochet compared to these other teams, right? If you roll him out in game one, you feel very, very good that you're going to win. He goes seven. You know, just hope the eighth inning doesn't crumble on you and you give it to Chapman in the ninth. Like that Sure. That's as good of a recipe as anybody has.
All right. Mets, Padres, Mariners still on the board. So are the Texas Rangers. Are we really not going to pick Cody Freeman's Rangers? Okay. I'm going to go with the New York Mets.
Correct.
And the reason I'm going to do that is a combination of Juan Soto and let the kids pitch. I don't know if this is a good strategy to just go to Nolan McLean and Jonah Tong and ask them to save our souls. But I'm going to enjoy watching them. And I think that the ceiling for this offense is certainly as high as, I mean, a lot of these teams. And yeah, give me Soto in October. I watched that up close last year. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And while I think that this could absolutely just crumble very fast because of just the questions on the mound, I am going to go with the Mets over the Padres because the Padres, oh, this kills me to not be wanting to be more confident in them. But the Padres offense right now and just the pitching, it's a combination. It's just like not the bullpen alone, especially now Jason Adams out, is not enough. The Super bullpen alone is not what I am counting on when there are too many other questions going on with this offensive group that hasn't been playing well. So again, Padres could go on a run too, but I'm going Mets.
I love that they're not playing well, the Padres, which is why I'm picking them so high. You got to get hot at the right time. And they're cold at the right time to get hot at the right time. Can't get hot at the right time if you were hot beforehand. And what I'm counting on for my Padres pick is the following. I'm counting on them to continue to slide and for the Mets to leap them so that the Padres end up with the sixth seed, the Dodgers of the three. Padres roll into LA for the wild card round, beat the Dodgers in Chavez Ravine, and then it's a runaway for
now. Now we go. Love that. Love that take. Yeah, no, I hate all of these picks. They're all terrible. They all sound great. All right. Let's wrap this up quickly. I will take the Seattle Mariners, who look absolutely horrific on the road. They have to face Chris Sale now, who has come back just to like piss off the teams that are have to face him in this non-existent playoff race for this poopy Braves team. And yeah, I mean, the vibes are not good with the Mariners, but I'll just go with the super cliche. If they get in, they got a shot. They got some good baseball play. They also have a good roster. You could say they have more talent than the Tigers. You could say they have more talent than some of these other teams.
What is talent even?
Certainly, right? Yeah, it's true. Certainly are not playing like it recently. That said, I will continue to believe that they are going to make it. Does that mean they're going to make it to the World Series? Probably not, but I do still think they're going to make it into the postseason, which brings us, Jake, to our final two picks of non-playoff teams. And I'm glad that you have to pick first here. So take it away. Who is going to be your one, outside the wild card pick to win the 2025 World Series?
Wild card. I will take the Kansas City Royals. Okay. For this.
Yeah.
Why? They won last night in rousing fashion, and I'm a easily influenced individual.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these teams will make it, so it doesn't really matter. I want to pick the Giants.
With that in mind, I am between the Giants and the Rays. Because I picked the Rays to make the postseason before the season. And I was just like, you know what? They're finally heating up. They just kicked the crap out of Seattle. And it would be a very funny thing for them to end up in the postseason, considering their current circumstances. That said, give me the Giants.
Let's go.
give me the fighting posies. They play the Dodgers 7 more times, but they also play the Cardinals and the D-backs combined 12 more times. So schedule is a little bit more favorable for the Giants. And yeah, give me the Gigantes World Series champs in an odd year, I should say.
In an odd year. It has certainly been an odd year. Let us know how we did. Email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Are you confident in your team? If you're a fan of a playoff team, are you like, we're not, no one's going to touch us. We're doing good all the way. Or are you like, God, we're going to go 2 and thanks for the memories. Let us know. Yeah. What did we get wrong? What did we get right? Email us. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we're going to be like, what the hell, Fromber? And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. There's something that we need to talk about. Jordan, you and I have been friends for a long time, partners, teammates, even. And there are times, certainly, where we were not on the same page. Times where I was frustrated with you, you were frustrated with me. But never once in our near decade and a half, oh my God, relationship, have either of us purposefully confused, bamboozled, or put the other person in danger, in harm's way, intentionally. Is that what happened in Houston on Tuesday night with Framber Valdez? Let's dig into this.
This was a strange scene. A lot of weird stuff happening in this Yankees-Astros series, most of which we are going to gloss over. Sorry to all the Brian Walsh haters out there. We are going to focus on Framber Valdez and the cross-up heard round the internet.
Let's keep this very simple at the beginning. What is a cross-up? Because I think that people who maybe don't watch a lot of baseball or didn't play baseball, this is not a term you hear a lot, particularly nowadays in the pitchcom era, but a cross-up is when the catcher puts down a sign or calls a certain pitch, the pitcher throws a different pitch, and the catcher, expecting pitch A, gets doinked or misled or, you know, confused and is unable to catch the ball because of the difference in the two pitch types. Now, this is significant at the big league level, especially for a pitcher like Framber Valdez, when his two most used pitches are a 93, 94 mile an hour sinker. And what is it, like an 82 mile an hour big looping curveball? That is a very different approach in terms of catching. And at times, it can be very dangerous for the catcher. At least it can be very unsettling to expect one pitch and receive the other when the other is a fastball. You have less time to react than you think. What happened on Tuesday night, Framber Valdez gives up a game-defining grand slam to Trent Grisham, Yankees mustachioed left-handed slugger. Right before he throws that pitch, the catcher for the Astros, Cesar Salazar, waved to Framber to step off the rubber because it appeared that the two were not on the same page regarding signs. Framber throws the pitch anyway. It was a fastball. Tried to throw it by Trent Grisham. Instead, Grisham hit it out. Next batter, Framber throws ball one, fastball high and away. Next pitch, he throws a fastball down the middle of the plate. It is very clear that Salazar is expecting a curveball. The ball hits Salazar in the chest, skitters away. Framber turns his back and walks away from his catcher. Salazar gets a new ball, kind of stares down Framber with a look of disgust, disdain, frustration, confusion, disbelief, but also like, of course, that guy just did this to me. And whether or not it was intentional, I think is hard to parse and maybe not worth our time and not something that we'll ever really know. But if you go online and you read what former players are saying, every single one of them was like, this was an act of war. Send him to The Hague. I'm not trying to like defend Framber here, because even if it wasn't intentional, it's still a horrendous look. But I feel a little bit hesitant being like, this was a dirty play.
Yeah. And I think that the thing that I feel totally comfortable reacting to is how he reacted. And I think that was what was so visceral to former players and to anybody who has experienced or watched what a cross-up looks like, which is it's a scary thing to happen. And yes, the catchers are wearing catcher's gear, but I mean, again, take a 94 to the chest, however dangerous that really is for someone. Basically, every time it happens, which, by the way, I would just say, side note, shocking that it does not happen more often. truly a stunning thing that this has not happened more often in the major league level. And that was true when they were doing signs with the fingers. That's true now with PitchCom. And, you know, they obviously, when they spoke after, okay, it's loud, you know, you're not always hearing. Like, there's all reasons that it could happen that it doesn't. Regardless of how much that influences the likelihood that Fromber did this on purpose or not, to see him clearly, there's no scenario in which Salazar was ready for this. I mean, that clearly he was not prepared for it.
Sure.
And for Fromber to turn his back and be like, sorry, dude, like, not even sorry, dude, and just say, oh, I apologize later, that was unusual. That was a display of a lack of a display of care for your catcher that I think is inexcusable, and regardless of the intent.
And I think that it is a catcher is notable. Catchers are baseball's nurses or troops. Okay. They are the frontline essential workers of the baseball world. We have had a joke of a plane full of people in catcher's gear and everyone's clapping. Thank you for your service.
Okay. Well, or just catchers should board first. You know,
catchers should board first.
Yeah, like these are
those
the people,
with families,
the essential workers. This our society does not. Members. Our baseball society does not function if there are not enough people crazy enough to put gear on and catch these pitches. And that is true more than ever at the major league level, where stuff is where it is.
Catchers are heroes. Okay.
Yes.
And they are generally treated that way in the baseball world. Okay. Pitchers will often buy gifts for their catchers as thank yous.
It's like an offensive line situation, right?
An offensive line situation. But because there is really each team has one starting catcher, they are revered internally, right? Generally. And whether that's Cal Raleigh or JT Realmuto, like all these dudes, you know, Yadi Molina, right? Like they are these, like, wow, what? I can't believe they do this for us. They are thanked endlessly. They catch bullpens. They're doing basically two jobs at once. In a way that a lot of people are not, except for, I guess, Shohei Ohtani. And for Fromber to not, in this moment, display concern for Cesar Salazar, like a minor league grinder who is up filling in as a backup, the power dynamic here between these two guys is significant.
Crucial.
And I think that for Fromber not to recognize that in the moment, I understand he's frustrated. Guess what, brother? Deal with it. Grow up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grow up. Like, if you do this to a catcher, Fromber has been playing baseball long enough that his first reaction when that happened should have been, oh my God, are you okay? Not, I need to cool down and compose myself. It was just like, not inhumane. It was just slightly unhuman and robotic and like emotionless and soulless in a way where I still don't think Fromber grabbed the ball and said, I hate Cesar Salazar and I'm frustrated with him and I want to injure his ribs. Like, I really do not believe that. I do still think that he is worthy of significant criticism for a lack of empathy the other day.
Yeah. And I think it's that. And I think the power dynamic is really important because, yes, this is Cesar Salazar's like 35th game in the big leagues. And also someone that I'm sure, you know, another dynamic you mentioned between a veteran pitcher and a young catcher, that is something that is sometimes difficult, where you have a pitcher that can be frustrated by a catcher that he's not necessarily used to, that it's like, oh, we're not on the same page. I wanted this. He wanted this. And I gave up a grand slam. It's all his fault. This is all still on Fromber to be the more mature veteran 100%. To recognize it, you're the one throwing the pitches. You're the one that's taking that should be taking responsibility for this and that you should be covering for your young catcher who's obviously doing his best to help you succeed. Regardless, I think your perspective is fair. I also do not blame people whatsoever for how it looks and thinking it was intentional. I think there is a chance it was intentional, and that is concerning, because if it was, even if it was intentional and he wasn't thinking, I want to injure him, but like, I'm going to do this to show him that I'm mad. I'm not even thinking about whether he's going to get injured or not because I'm just so focused and angry. Any version of that is disappointing. The way that he tried to explain it away after the game was disappointing and nonsense. And you mentioned the power dynamic too. The reason why that's relevant also is because what Cesar Salazar not going to do? Come out after the game and be like, that dude, like he's gonna cover for him because that's the gig. Especially if you're in your 35th game of the big leagues and you're trying to stick around. You think he's going to come out there and blast Fromber Valdez and throw? Like, no, it's not going to happen.
He's going to eat it. He's going to wear
it. So even if he knows in his heart, even if Cesar Salazar knows, yes, there's no way that he didn't know that I called a curveball and he still did it anyway. It's possible, but he's not in position now, to say something about that.
Fromber is widely thought to be the best starting pitcher available in the free agent market this winter. Do I think this impacts his free agency a little bit? I do. I think this is something baseball people care about. I think at the end of the day, his track record is going to earn him a lot of money regardless of what he did the other day. This was the biggest cross up since Tyronn Lue. There's your joke.
Wow. Great reference. All right. Enough about Fromber and Cesar Salazar. Let's get to my field report.
Jordan, you got in the car.
Sure did.
Your RAV4.
Not quite.
Your CRV.
Yes.
You got in your CRV. You got in your CRV, no free ads. And you drove from Ohio to Pittsburgh, from where you live, to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, for the Los Angeles Dodgers. You did not drive there for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I mean, maybe for Paul Skeens a little bit. But mostly just to get eyes on the LA Dodgers, who, as we mentioned, laid a poop-smelling egg this week at PNC Park against the Buccos, who have been playing relatively well over the last few months. What were your takeaways, thoughts, ideas, concerns from your experience in the Steel City?
Yeah, I mean, so I only saw the two games, the last two games of this series. The series opener was kind of an ugly slugfest between the two teams, which is relevant because the talking points over the next 48 hours was this Dodgers offense stinks. The Dodgers came very close to being shut out in consecutive games for the first time since the beginning of the 2018 season. they salvage that by Mookie goes yard, and then they kind of spark around. Well, I want to get to how the game ended last night because it was just an incredibly hilarious sequence. But they're knocking the ball around against Bubba Chandler on Tuesday, but Kershaw struggles and the bullpen struggles. And that's also not good because you're facing a Pirates offense that is obviously one of the worst in the league. Losing a slugfest to the Pirates is not a good look, right? So that was already vibes were bad. Wednesday, it's like, you know what? We're chilling. We got Shohei Ohtani going today. Ever heard of him?
He's got the sniffles.
Good pitcher. Just kidding. He's not. So that was certainly what I was driving to go see. I wanted to go see Shohei pitch. I came to Pittsburgh last year to see Shohei face Paul Skeens as a batter. But I wanted to see, last week I was like, oh, wait a minute. We might get Ohtani versus Skeens on the mound. That doesn't line up. But Shohei doesn't even end up pitching because there's some sort of illness going around the Dodgers clubhouse that has affected a few guys, and Shohei wasn't feeling awesome. Awesome to the point where, well, it's also funny because he's like, yeah, so he was feeling really sick yesterday. We asked him, like, could you hit? He's like, yeah, I'm good. I can hit. Hits a 120 mile per hour home run for his 100th career homer as a Dodger. Has three hits. He's the only Dodger that does anything offensively on Wednesday, even though he doesn't start. So Ohtani, the hitter, didn't look as good on last night, but he's still able to do that. But they basically decided from a fatigue stamina standpoint, asking him to take four at-bats is different than asking him to throw 90 pitches, which I think is totally reasonable. Emmett Sheehan, they kind of had waiting in the wings, who had an awesome start against the Reds the week prior. He's their de facto six right now. He subs in. And Emmett Sheehan was fine. Like, the pitching was not the problem on Wednesday. You know, normally when you have those late pitching plans, you're like, uh-oh, how are we going to get through this game? No, it was fine. He was good. Kasperius was good. Robleski was good. Didn't matter. Offense totally no-showed. And that was against Braxton Ashcraft and Mike Burrows and Dennis Santana. Ashcraft is good. Ashcraft is good. Again, Pirates have good pitchers. Okay. Still, you're the Dodgers. You should be able to score runs. They didn't score runs. They don't score runs against Paul Skeens. No surprise there. And yeah, it's just this weird thing where, again, we did a version of this last year because the Padres are not pushing them. I'm fascinated at the way that the Dodgers almost the variance in how much they acknowledge the Padres as a character. Like,
so
there's
funny.
Some people like Will Smith who are just like, who? The who? Who are,
I don't know
who
them.
Are they? Where do they play?
Not
and
familiar.
Then there's other. Then Dave Roberts is very honest. Like, yeah. It's like, yeah, the Padres, of course. We can't. We know that they're the team that they're trying to beat us.
That Will Smith thing is like when a player, like during a scrum, be like, hey, do you ever like see outside noise, things that are said about you? And the player's like, no. And then the interview finishes, and then you just see them walk over to the locker, and they're just like scrolling on their phone. It's like, what are you looking at? You're just like, cookie recipes. Like, no, see this stuff. Maybe. Don't lie to me.
They see it all. They see it all. But anyway. So Dave Roberts was honest. It's like, hey, dude, you know, you could have really built this lead while the Padres were getting swept by the Orioles. And he's like, yeah, sorry, we were busy getting swept by the Pirates. Sucks to suck. I think Dave Roberts is definitely frustrated with the quality of the at-bats from the younger players.
I see.
Whether that's fair or not.
He seems really frustrated with Teo,
of course, who's really struggled. But like, As angry as people are about Conforto, rightfully so, you know, he's looking at the at-bats, honestly, from Dalton Rushing, honestly, from Pajes, who has been good. And it's just like, no, we gotta keep moving the line so that our MVPs can hit more often. It's just not happening. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, the Pirates do have good pitchers, and they showed that. That said, the ending to last night was so funny because Will Smith, who was injured in that Wednesday game, leaves the game. Dalton Rushing comes in. Foul tip off the hand. He's unavailable. Unavailable to the point where they don't think they're going to put him on the IL, but they need to get an emergency catcher. So what do? They call Ben Rortvedt, and they're like, hey,
who
dude,
exists?
We need you. Who they traded for from the Rays in a swap for Hunter Fiducia. And I guess they got a pitching prospect, too, who's pretty good. But Ben Rortvedt, they're like, we need a guy just to cover our bases because we're not going to have Alex Call be our emergency catcher or whatever, right?
We need some troops. We need a nurse.
Bingo. We need support here. We need backup. So they bring in Ben Rortvedt. They activate him just again because they do not want to go to Will Smith in the case of Dalton Rushing gets injured or can't catch. They're down 5-0 towards the end of the game. They bring in Rortvedt for defense for the bottom of the eighth because they're like, we got to get Rushing off his feet. He's about to catch the next three games probably in Baltimore because Will Smith is hurt and this game's over. Uh-oh. Time to rally. Dodgers start scoring in the top of the ninth. Here they come. Uh-oh. Who's up? Ben Rortvedt. Ben Rortvedt, who I think was like the go-ahead run of the game tying run. Who probably took two flights to get there that morning, was not expecting to hit, strikes out with Ohtani on deck. Game over. Pirates sweep the Dodgers in Pittsburgh for the first time in 10 years, and the Dodgers look like fools and head to Baltimore, where I like their chances of scoring runs more. I will say that, but we will see how I believe it is Glasnow, Yamamoto, Kershaw this weekend. I do not know who's pitching for Baltimore, but no matter who it is, it's
doesn't
not
really
as
matter.
Good as Paul Skeens.
Doesn't really matter unless it's Trevor Rogers, who is as good as Paul
unless it's
Skeens.
Trevor Rogers, who's finally gave up some runs, but that's true. Bradish, right? I don't know if Bradish is pitching. He's good. Anyway, but the Dodgers, like again, like I'm with you, as you said earlier, I still would have picked them pretty early because I know the best version of this team is awesome. If they do end up sweating it out and not getting a bye, I mean, that is significant. And like, that is something that they clearly, even if they stay ahead of the Padres, they might end up in that three seed. And like, that's not nothing. Cause those three game series are pretty terrifying. It's not the one game like it used to be. It's still pretty terrifying.
If you hate fastball velocity, Kershaw Sugano on Sunday. Make sure you tune in.
Oh, baby. Yeah. So we'll see. Ohtani's going to go Monday against the Rockies back at home. So assuming, and then that's the other irony of Ohtani getting scratched. It's like this rotation is finally healthy for the first time. So we'll see if that sustains. And then lastly, just because I wouldn't not, like Paul Skeens, holy crap. The dude's ERA for his career now starts with a 1. He is throwing a changeup that is now like one of the best pitches in baseball, and he doesn't even really understand why. I'm looking forward to writing about that in the coming weeks. So you can look out for that at Yahoo. But Skeens is awesome. He is just what a performer. And it's a treat. It's a treat to watch him. And I got to be honest, just bigger picture. However long he's a Pirate, it's cool that he'll be 2.5 hours away for me to drive over whenever he's pitching against a team like the Dodgers. So
you can say, hey, Paul.
Cheers to you, Paul Skeens. You are going to win the Cy Young.
And Paul goes, hey, man. Paul Skeen. I need to get like my Paul Skeen's voice down.
Paul is I think the funniest thing about Skeens is like, he is so monotone, but since, as we've gotten to talk to him a little bit more, when he cracks and he smiles or laughs, it's like, it's like so funny. And the funniest moment last night in the scrum was someone asked him like, hey, like you have a winning record now, which is like a thing. It was like, can you win the Cy Young? You're 8-9. And he's like, yeah, can't. He's like, he laughed and he was like, can't say that anymore. It's like, yeah, that's true. 10-9. So, sorry, Christopher Sanchez.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not focused on Cy Young.
He's not. He's just like, whatever happens. It's about winning ball games. It's the same thing as last year. It's like, I'm just going to go out and pitch, and we'll see. We'll see what happens at the end of the year. So, he is amazing. We are very fortunate to have him in our game. All right, Jake, let's take a break. When we return, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Great. Cool.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's Friday. Shouts out Rebecca Black. Let's do the good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right. Something good, something bad, something ugly from the week that was. I will start with something good, and that is Munetaka Murakami. This is a name that you should get ready to hear a lot of, folks. As this dude is in all likelihood going to come to Major League Baseball next year, he is an unbelievable power hitter for the Swallows in the top level of baseball in Japan, known as the MPB. And Mr. Murakami, who missed the first few months of the season with an injury, and it was like, oh man, this isn't really the season that he wanted to have before he makes the jump to MLB. He came back and he is on some kind of heater.
Tear.
In fact, I believe he homered again like an hour ago.
Yeah,
3-run homer
today. Yeah, this morning.
Which gives him 18 homers in just 35 games. Now, that is absurd in any context. It is especially absurd in the context of NPB in 2025, which currently has essentially whatever the opposite of our juiced ball in 2019, that is what is existing in NPB this year, where the home run leader is a very, very good player named Teruaki Sato, has 36 home runs. Teruaki Sato has 36 home runs. Franmil Reyes, 28. A couple other guys with 20. Chusei Manami, good player, 19. Murakami is now, with 100 fewer games than everyone else, is 6th on the home run leaderboard.
No way.
So, there's only 4 guys with 20 home runs this year, and he just hit his 18th in 35 games. So, a lot more Murakami discourse to come. There's a lot that goes into it, but I'm just putting his name back on the radar because I think we're going to be talking about him a lot in the next few months.
I agree. I was texting with an international scouting director about a month ago when Murakami came back, like the first week, and I was like, Murakami back. And he said, went and saw him. He is on a mission. And a month later, could not have been more correct.
Now listen, striking. He also has the highest strikeout rate, I think, in the league, which again, he is a very unusual kind of hitter in this league. That said, he's going to be 25 and he might have, I don't know, 70, 80 raw power and might be able to play third. So, Just file that one away, folks. We're going to be talking about him a lot this winter. Munetaka Murakami.
Vinny Pasquantino has cornrows. Now, did it look good? Did it look good? Debatable. I think it is good that he went and got them. It appears that he got them because Salvador Perez said that if the team got over 500 after a certain date, he would get cornrows, and Vinny promised that he would too. That happened. Vinny had forgotten about it. Salvi then apparently texted Vinny a picture of him with cornrows and said, it's your turn. And because Vinny is the man, he said, bet. Went and got his cornrows, did. How many people with the last name Pasquantino have ever had cornrows? Is he the first? A real trailblazer who can say? It was a really delightful thing to watch. Him kind of explain to the media with a straight face why he now had cornrows. I will say it is bad that they're already gone. Vinny appears to have taken them out almost right away. Unsure why. Vinny, if you want to talk more about your cornrows, come on the show.
I'm going to see him in Cleveland next week. So
let us know.
I will ask him. I will do some journalism.
I love when players say, if we get to this, if we do this, then I'll do that. That's always great. And it's better when it's a haircut. And I just give Vinny props for following through here. And I give Salvi props for recognizing that Vinny Pasquantino in cornrows is funny for a day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It is also the kind of thing that, like, if, you know, even if Carlos Estevez or even Bobby Witt or anybody else on the Royals had said this, I think Vinny probably would have gotten away with not doing it. But Salvador Perez.
Salvi says jump, you say he, how cornrows.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Back to the catcher premise.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Let's go to bad. Jake, the Minnesota Twins. This isn't going great. It's really not. Could have seen this coming when they traded their whole team away, but this is sinking to levels that even I didn't really think it would get this bad this fast. They were mopped at home this week by the Chicago White Sox in truly awful fashion. And while they are still like 10 games up on the White Sox in the standings, they have nearly identical run differentials. And it is really, really, really bleak. And the White Sox are having a damn good time, and good for them. And honestly, it was one of those series where you're thinking and you're like, okay, if the Twins trade Joe Ryan and like really tear this thing down, and the White Sox finish the year strong, like am I going to be picking the White Sox over the Twins next season? like that would have seemed completely inconceivable. You could still say it's crazy. But the vibes and the talent, the young talent that was performing and not performing and all of it combined for these four games and the way these games unfolded, and you were just like, man, like I'd rather be the White Sox. and maybe it's just a commentary on Justin Ishbia, I guess. Like Justin Ishbia basically made that decision. So
if you're doing vibes, man. If you're like indexing the vibes, I would say the two teams right now in baseball with the worst vibes pretty comfortably are the Twins and the Nats.
Yeah. Mariners making a run at it.
You're still in
true.
A playoff
yes.
spot.
Yes, 100%. But no, I agree. And even the Nats just swept the Marlins. So, you know, but no, the Twins are in a
Anything
different.
Is
because
possible.
Again, like the Rockies are awful. The White Sox are awful. They seem to be having a pretty good time.
Yes.
You know, I know we didn't even talk about Devers Freeland stuff, whatever. He, you know, Kyle Freeland's having a rough go. But other than that, you know, I feel like those bad teams are kind of still enjoying themselves. Yeah. And the White Sox here, man, oh, man, they look like they're having a great time.
So my bad was going to be Roman Anthony straining his oblique being out until October. But I mentioned that before, and that's kind of boring and straightforward. I want to talk about James Wood.
Oh.
James Wood is having a very odd year. So James Wood broke out in the first half with a tidal wave of home runs, made the All-Star team, well-deserved, started the All-Star game, was in the home run derby. Since the All-Star game, however, he has kind of fallen off quite a bit in those 2 months. James Wood's numbers have really dwindled. But what I wanted to bring up with James Wood is his strikeouts, because James Wood currently leads baseball with 188 strikeouts with 23 games remaining. That is notable because the all-time single season record for strikeouts is Mark Reynolds, 223 strikeouts. James Wood is within swing and missing distance of that record. He will almost certainly get to 200. something that only, I believe, 21 players have ever done. And I think it's pretty clear that he'll get to 210, which will put him kind of in the upper echelon of strikeout artists. Something to keep in mind in regards to James Wood.
I didn't
realize
that
he... Who is still really good. Like, I'm not...
Yeah.
This is not... I mean, he's a bad player. 640 OPS since the All-Star break. 3 home runs.
Yeah.
72 strikeouts since the All-Star break. Just keep an eye.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a whole feature about Riley Green leading baseball in strikeouts and being awesome. So, like, you can do both. I did not realize how far ahead Wood got of Green. He's 13 more punch outs than Green, who's second. So, man, oh, man. That is, I don't think he's catching Reynolds, but it is concerning that it is maybe even going to be close. So, we will keep an eye on that. My Ugla this week is a Twitter account, or perhaps a former Twitter account, although I believe it is still active. Jake, did you see the story about Laura Rutledge?
Yes, kind of. I glanced at it.
This was a terrific story. Laura Rutledge, who is a host for ESPN, their football coverage, by all accounts, awesome. Great at her job. Everybody likes Laura Rutledge. Laura Rutledge is married to Josh Rutledge, former major leaguer. I believe has been married to him or with him since before he was a major leaguer and long after. Josh Rutledge appeared in 370 games from 2012 to 2017. And Laura Rutledge went on the Andrew Marchand's podcast. And in discussing her career and how she got to this point and her, you know, relationship with Josh and all these things, admitted that she had a burner account during Josh's career that she used to essentially defend his honor, which is so incredible that she was like, yeah, I did this. It's funny now. I don't even know if he knows. But the premise of this is so incredible because she basically admits like, yeah, like I did this because I was thought I was, you know, standing up for my husband. I know now that was a bad idea. She like vaguely remembered the handle, which has since been seemingly confirmed in the funniest possible way, which is that Alden Gonzalez, friend of the podcast, who must have
also
seen this story at ESPN, went back and found a tweet that she, aka HaloBilly27, which was her burner account, tweeted at Alden Gonzalez during the 2015 season when Josh was with the Angels, basically being like, why are you forgetting about Josh Rutledge? He should be called up instead of Taylor Featherston. Again, amazing 2015 Angels stuff. Now, what is most, this is ugly. There's so many things that are ugly about this that are so great. To me, what is the most ugly, okay? Because again, she responded to this tweet, seemingly confirming like, yes, that was me, okay?
By the way, so Josh Rutledge, AAA, Salt Lake City, PCL, 2015, 727
he's in the minors.
OPS.
Never even makes it up not to the big leagues. Never even makes it up to the big leagues with the Angels.
Not worthy in that ballpark.
Sure. Whatever. That's irrelevant. But what is the most ugly and so funny to me that Laura basically admitted on this podcast, but then it really is backed up when you go and look at the tweets from this account, is that she didn't want it to all be Josh Rutledge tweets, right?
Incredible.
But what is so bizarre, going and looking at this account, which again is still live, HaloBilly27, is that even after Josh Rutledge was traded by the Angels, she was still tweeting about the Angels.
She didn't want to give up the pick. Like, and she fell in love with the Angels.
There's no evidence that she was like originally an Angels fan, although maybe that is the case, and like she was still hanging on. But like that is a commitment to the bit that is just so amazing and bizarre that she couldn't quit it. She loved being HaloBilly27, that even when Josh was long gone and she didn't have to worry about what they were doing anymore, she was still tweeting things like on August 9th, hey, Angels fans, our three new left fielders are hitting a combined 132 since joining our team. Thanks for the trades, front office, really helping us win. So Again, there's so many ugly elements to this, but Laura, I love that you were just posting through this. Again, I don't know Laura at all, but I hope, I would love to get even more details about this now that she's seemingly confirmed that this was indeed her.
Do you think she's Angel's grandma?
No. Angel's grandma is as real as it gets.
I'm going to keep my ugly very short.
Yeah.
Rafael Devers homering, getting yelled at by Kyle Freeland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I spoiled this earlier. Yeah.
A brawl ensuing. Shove brawl. A pretty lively shove brawl. A lot of chest-to-chest action. Freeland getting ejected. Chapman, Adames getting ejected. Devers then having to round the bases to complete his home run as the new pitcher, Antonio Sensatella, is warming up for his relief appearance for Kyle Freeland. And then because of the defensive arrangement that was necessary with Christian Kos moving from second to short and someone moving to first base, basically Rafael Devers ended up playing third base for the first time all season because he hit a home run so completely that it pissed Kyle Freeland off. And that's how he finally got to play third base again. If that's not ugla, I don't know what is.
I mean, just the rounding the bases like 10 minutes after the homer.
So good.
That by itself is beautiful. So, yeah, I mean, we could have talked about that whole situation much longer, but I'm glad you included it in this week's good, bad, and ugla. Jickmints, we must end this podcast. Before we say goodbye, let's preview the weekend. I mentioned it earlier, Blue Jays at Yankees. Ooh, that's delicious. Mm. Mets at Reds. Reds, if not now, when? You're five games back.
Thank
but
you,
if you can't win this, if you can't win this series against the Mets, we're totally done talking about you. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like this is we really got to move on. Brandon Sproat will be making his major league debut on Sunday as again the Mets are letting the kids pitch. I think it's going to be Tong, Sproat, McLean, like three straight days. I'm not sure the exact order, so that's exciting if you're a Mets fan. Giants at Cardinals. Those two teams are both painfully mid, but maybe the Giants can stay hot. Astros at Rangers. That is spicy for sure. Those games are important for both of those teams. We'll see how the Mariners do in Atlanta. And then finally, of course, the big anniversary tomorrow, 2-1-3-1. Cal Ripken Jr., friend of the show. If you haven't listened to that conversation that we had with Cal Ripken Jr., ahead of the big anniversary of him breaking Lou Gehrig's record, I encourage everyone to go check that out because it was a cool opportunity for us and I think a cool conversation that will set the stage for what promises to be a very interesting celebration. And yep. We'll see if the Dodgers, especially if they lose tonight, the Dodgers are going to have to sit through all this. Is Cal going to do another lap? That would be funny if they stop the game.
Should.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they have planned, but I know you won't be there, but I'm looking forward to seeing the scenes from Baltimore. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye, Jake Mintz?
No.
Okay. Happy birthday. I hope you enjoy your birthday today and your weekend. Everyone say happy birthday to Jake.
Happy birthday to my fellow September 5thers.
Oh, yeah. Who else we got?
Bill Mazeroski.
Oh, that's a good one.
Hall of Famer, Reese Hines, Randy Rodriguez,
Stephen Kwan. Jaron Duran. Oh, it's Stephen Kwan.
Blake Trahan.
Ryan Spielborg. Send him a text. Send Spilly a text for sure.
Happy birthday to us, Spilly.
All right, we're done. Thank you all for listening. Bye. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That is how you can reach us. We appreciate it. Everyone have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.